I'm Kevin, a.k.a. Neon Nazgul from the Operation Pug Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopXCast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We are a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopXCast. You are listening to PopXCast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopXCast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
All right, and welcome everyone. This is PopXCast coming to you live on this Monday, July the 10th, 2017. And of course, we are a day late, but we're not a dollar short, right, Austin Burke?
We are not a dollar short, Joe, and we are talking about Spider-Man today. Yeah. So I am very, very excited. Maybe my favorite comic book character of all time.
And he's back, Joe. Oh, it is really nice to see the web slinger back on the screen, but more importantly, now directly tied to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we are so excited to have Spidey now part of the whole Stark Avengers world. And dare I even say it, an Avenger himself. But joining us, look at this, already in the chat room, we have Lindsay Badger, we have Darth Baca, Luke is hanging out, we have Andy. Andy, what's up, man? And of course, all of our great friends, and of course, my other cousin and your brother, Mr. Josh Burke. And he just gave us a spoiler alert warning. Gwen Stacy dies. Thank you, Josh.
That's just the last movie, man.
That was Andrew Garfield about 3 years ago. But yes, you were right. Gwen Stacy, what's wrong?
He was with me in the theater. He know. Yeah, I don't know.
What is wrong with him? I don't know. Anyway, there's something wrong with him. There's a screw loose somewhere. But hey, guys, before we get started, we want to remind you all to definitely share this on your social media, on your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Attach it to a rocket, send it to the moon, whatever you need to do. Just help us get the word out there and share, and that way we can get some friends hanging out with us. But we want to get this party started, so let's go. Welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXCast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian Geek at Heart. If you guys missed episode 59, where we talked about Transformers, check our official website at PopXCast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX. Oh, be sure to head over to Google Play and or iTunes after the show. Click that subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from the PopX archive. And hey, while you're there, we would love for you guys to show us some geeky love by leaving a 5-star rating and review. 5 stars.
Not four. Four won't do it. We're talking five. All right. 5 stars. Well, let's get into the news. We'll be right back. Don't go nowhere. PopX returns in just a second.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXCast.com.
Austin Burke, how about you lead us out on the news this week?
Oh, I would lead us off, but we are leading off on something that is, it's not what we wanted to talk about, but we have to get it off the bat. So Joan? I just want to make, so it's Joan Lee.
Yeah.
The wife of beloved comic book, book legend Stan Lee has passed away at the age of 93. Marvel Entertainment has posted an official statement about her death saying, "We are so saddened to hear about the loss of Joan Lee. We lost a member of the Marvel family today, and our thoughts and prayers go out to Stan and his daughter, Joan, in this difficult time." Stan and Joan had two children, JC, who was born in 1950, and Jan, who was born in 1953, but passed away 3 days after her birth. Joan Lee reportedly suffered a stroke earlier in the week. She and Stan were married on December 5th, listen to this, 1947, and remained so until her passing on Thursday. Stan has credited his wife with helping him create the Fantastic Four, telling him to create something that he was proud of before he quit his job in the comics industry. And Joe, I was actually able to go on and watch the video that Marvel Entertainment released of Stan Lee talking about this. And just, you could tell that he loved his wife, and you could tell he truly believed that she was the reason that he stayed into this industry. So it's just a sad thing to lead off with. But Stan, we love you, man. And Joe, how do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, Joan, being a comic book historian and stuff, I do know that beyond the shadow of a doubt, Stan was ready to leave Timely Comics. And, Martin Goodman kept pushing him to do comics that were just full of action. No story, no backstory, no character development or anything, just action scenes. And he was just so sick and tired of it. And Joan just said, why don't you create a book? If you're going to leave and you create the book and you get fired, you're leaving anyway. So what deal does it make? And that was Joan's own words. And Stan was like, okay, well, I'll do it. And he created Fantastic Four. And literally within 30 days, the return on investment on Fantastic Four, just it was amazing. And then of course, Martin Goodman said, okay, I want more stories like this. And that's when he started creating The Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man, and just so many of his amazing favorites, and ultimately ended up changing the name of the company from Timely to Marvel Comics. So definitely a sad panda moment, if you will. But
I miss her.
Also, too, this one is on the radar this week, and I know it's not in comic book news, but it is pop culture news, and it is another passing. And if you're any fan of rock and roll like I am, I used to be a DJ for 10 years on our FM radio station. Singer Joe Cocker, whose career spanned more than 50 years, has died after a long battle with lung cancer. Cocker, known for his rasping voice, rose to fame with his cover of the Beatles song "With a Little Help from My Friends." Oh, I love that song, which went to number one in 1968. A long time after a longtime U.S. resident, he lived on a ranch in Colorado with his second wife, Pam. His death at age 70 was confirmed by Barry Marshall, his agent for more than 30 years, who said Cocker was, and quote, without a doubt, the greatest rock so voice ever to come out of Britain, and remained the same man throughout his life. Hugely talented, a true star, but kind of humble, and who loved to perform. Anyone who ever saw him live will never forget him, end quote. So definitely a little bit of a moving thing. Joe Cocker was awesome, and a lot of people will remember the theme song to the Wonder Years. That was definitely Mr. Joe Cocker there rocking that out as well. But again, our thoughts go out to him and his family, and just, man, what a legacy he's leaving behind. So
people continued to say last year, 2016, you striked again, struck again. Well, guess what? 2017, we've had some pretty
sucks, man.
Losses so far. I mean, we're just getting to the point where all these legends are getting older, and we're losing a generation of great, amazing talents, artists, you know, singers, actors. It's a tough thing to do, but you know what? When something happens like that, you can take some time to look back at their life
and not to backtrack, Austin. But I think you know, with the death of Joan, a lot of concern has now been placed on the mental health of Stan going forward, and you know, he is 95 now, and you know, just send him a lot of love, thoughts, and prayers your way, for sure.
That's all the fans can do. But we're going to turn the tides right now. We want to talk about something that's awesome and something that has to do with the topic of this podcast. Marvel Studios and Sony Pictures' Spider-Man Homecoming surpassed all box office expectations this weekend, earning an estimated $117 million domestically. That comes in first place. The film took in $50.86 million on Friday, an estimated $37.15 million on Saturday, and the studio's projecting that $29 million for Sunday from 4,348 locations. Spider-Man Homecoming took in $10.6 million from 392 IMAX screens domestically. The film is Sony Pictures' second highest opening movie of all time, and second only to Spider-Man 3's $151.1 million. The opening is also the highest for a non-sequel standalone Marvel Cinematic Universe film. Joe, are you impressed with this $117 million?
You know what? I kind of saw the writing on the wall even before the film ever dropped over in the UK or here in the US. I knew going in with Kevin Feige on board and just the writing and the scripting and knowing he's part of the MCU, I knew there was going to be an awesome story. There was an awesome story. It was great. Yeah. It was done perfectly. And awesome. I think we finally have gotten the young, quirky teenage Peter Parker that we've all kind of wanted to see. And I think no disrespect to Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, because both of their roles uniquely are just amazing. Especially, I'm a huge fan of Andrew Garfield's adaptation of Spider-Man. So, but great. I think Tom Holland is a home run for sure.
I do too. I agree. And the a lot of people will look at this and say, "Well, I expected 140 million because that's what Guardians 2." Listen, this is the third incarnation of Spider-Man. The fact that it made this much money is incredible, and the predictions going into the weekend were like 90 million. So that's pretty daggone good, Joe.
That is really good, and you know it just goes to show. And they've already even dropped. This is not even part of the headlines, but they've already dropped sequels for the next two. They're saying that they are, you know, based on the success of this one, that it's going to be confirmed that there's going to be a 2 and a 3. So, dude, that's really good. That's really awesome, and absolutely. So moving on here, also too, you said 3. There's actually 4. If you include Nicholas Hammond's 1970s adaptation of the TV series,
I watched it as a kid. I'll just say that.
Yeah,
I was like, ooh, but now it's like
it's pretty cheesy. It's pretty bad. But anyway, moving forward, it was just over 2 years ago that we first learned The Fault in Our Stars director Josh Boone was in talks to bring the New Mutants movie to the big screen. Now, Boone has taken to Instagram to reveal the production on the film officially began today. We are talking July the 10th, 2017. Check out, there's also, if you go on there, you can see an actual picture that he posted. It's kind of funny, but the New Mutants adapts the monthly comic book series of the same name that launched in 1982. It was created by Chris Claremont and Bob McLeod. The New Mutants follows on a group of teenage mutants as heroes in training in the Marvel Universe. The feature is expected to be a departure from the sci-fi action spectacle of the X-Men films and is instead being described as, get this, quote-unquote, Stephen King meets John Hughes-style horror.
Ooh. Wow.
So that's pretty dark sounding, right?
I've never heard – well, the fact – listen to this, though. X-Men is doing something that I think is unprecedented. They are taking all of these new movies and they're going in a different direction with each of them. You had Deadpool that was a raunchy comedy. You had Logan that was a hardcore rough style Western. And now you have this movie, which is a horror style movie about children. And I mean, that's
I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of enjoying what Fox is doing lately with the X-Men franchise.
Is that weird to say?
It is kind of weird to say. I think, honestly, yeah, I would love to see X-Men on screen with the Avengers and the MCU, but at the same time,
of course,
how many characters can you actually have on screen and big names at one? I mean, it's unimaginable, and I'm not saying that Marvel can't do the unimaginable because they are doing Infinity War with 68 superheroes at one time in a movie, but it's mind-boggling.
And Marvel doesn't do R-rated films either. So if they would have had the rights to these characters, we would have never gotten Deadpool, Logan, or maybe even New Mutants.
And Logan is one of my favorite X-Men movies of all time. I'm just throwing that out.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. Absolutely. So R-rated is great, but what Marvel is doing is great as well. Well, we're going to switch over here to Netflix. Even as the streaming service today debuts the first season of the animated show Castlevania, Netflix has solidified plans for a Castlevania season 2, increasing the episode order, thank goodness, from 4 in its first season to 8 for a second season. A Konami video game, the first Castlevania was a popular title for the original Nintendo Entertainment System following the game's release in 1986. The storyline has the player controlling a vampire hunter by the name of Simon Belmont. Belmont, the last surviving member of the disgraced Belmont clan, is trying to save Eastern Europe from extinction at the hand of Vlad Dracula Tepe himself. Inspired by the game, the animated Castlevania hails from best-selling author and comic book legend Warren Ellis. Joe, have you had a chance to check out season 1?
You know what? It's actually on my radar, and I may even start even tonight as we wrap up tonight and as in the midnight hour, just vegging in the man cave. Probably getting into this because I'm truly excited to. I'm a huge fan of Castlevania, always have been. And I even have the original 1986 NES game, and Simon's Quest. Wow. After that, I have I'm OG when it comes to the word Castlevania. So I'm just saying. But
I think you'll love it.
I really do. Probably will. You know me. But moving on here, this is kind of a interesting one. Samuel L. Jackson is set to return as Nick Fury in Captain Marvel, first reported by the Omega Underground. Deadline confirms that the news of Samuel L. Jackson is set to return, and he will be in upcoming Marvel Studios films and definitely in Captain Marvel. He will reunite with his Kong Skull Island co-star Brie Larson for the film. The last we saw of Nick Fury was in 2015's Avengers Age of Ultron, but it's expected he will appear in the Avengers Infinity War 2 just ahead of Captain Marvel.
Wow. That's you know what? Spider-Man and Homecoming, we had Tony Stark and Spider-Man, that dynamic. We could see the same thing kind of pan out with Nick Fury and Captain Marvel, because mm-hmm. the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain Marvel dynamic is an interesting one in the comic yep. books. And I like seeing Nick Fury on screen. Every time he's on screen, I feel like we get a tiny character arc. So if we can continue to push his character,
yeah,
I think I'll appreciate it.
And you know, maybe at some point we'll have snakes on a plane.
Oh, snakes.
I'm joking. Move on. Just let that go.
While a certain friendly neighborhood superhero swings into theaters this weekend, much of this summer's movie hype has been around two yeah. comic book based properties, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Wonder Woman. Recently, industry tracking indicates that the latter, okay, listen to this, could possibly gross more than the former at the domestic box office. Mm. While Guardians currently leads the domestic box office gross with almost $385 million, Wonder Woman is quickly closing the gap between the two. Despite being out for a month less in the box office than Guardians, Wonder Woman currently sits around $361.5 million, and according to Box Office Mojo, it shows no signs of slowing down. Since the second week of Wonder Woman's release, it has outperformed Guardians in terms of weekly gross, just recently earning almost double of what the Marvel Studios film did in its fifth week. If this pattern were to continue, fans could easily see the DCEU film overtake Guardians' domestic gross, possibly within a matter of weeks. So, Joe, you see Guardians opening weekend at about $140 million, and you see Wonder Woman's at $105 million. You're not thinking that Wonder Woman is going to make more money. But it seems to me like that's what's going on.
Well, it seems like to me that DC definitely has a hit. Somebody got the script right. The acting was, I mean, you can go back and read our review here on PopX. Just go back a couple of episodes and dive into Wonder Woman goodness. And it truly is a spectacular film and one of my favorite DC comic films definitely to date.
Absolutely.
And so I'm not surprised. I mean, it's a home run all the way around from beginning to end of the film. Wonder Woman is just fantastic. Fantastic.
Yes,
so moving on, only got three more here, and we're going to dive into this week's topic with Spidey-Man. But Sega is bringing some of its best retro games to your smartphone. Now, back in June, the company announced a new service called Sega Forever, which is essentially a lineup of classic games from the company that will be available on both iOS and Android. Each game will be available, are you ready for this, for free.
Oh,
you can pay $1.99, a one-time fee, to turn off ads, and it will include modern features like cloud saves, Bluetooth controller support, and online leaderboards. Oh, my gosh. Sega notes, however, that you can still play each game offline. You don't need to be online. So once you download it to the app, there you go. At launch, 5 Sega Genesis games will be available, including the original Sonic the Hedgehog, which was already previously available on mobile, Comic Zone, Altered Beast, Kid Chameleon, and Phantasy Star 2. As the Sega Forever collection expands through the months and years, the company explains it will include both official emulations and ported games that pan all Sega console eras, each adapted specifically for mobile devices while running faithful to their original game sources. Oh my God.
My body is not ready.
Can you say, what? Sega in the palm of your hand or on an iPad Pro?
I can't do this. This is too much for me.
I love you, Sega. No, this might be the happiest moment of my life.
Do we understand what's happening here? No one is going to have a life. Everyone is going to be on their phones for the rest of eternity.
This is not. Well, I don't know. This is good. This is not good. This is good. This is not good.
It's so conflicting.
But all we have to say, Sega forever. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's going to be amazing. So Forrest Gump composer Alan Silvestri is set to score Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One, according to Variety. Frequent Spielberg collaborator John Williams, who has scored all but two of his films, will take on another Spielberg picture, The Papers. Now, Joe, if you haven't heard about The Papers, this has Oscars.
It's Spielberg glory. Yes.
It really does. And this is reportedly happening because post-production for both films is happening at the same time. You know what? I understand this and I don't mind this. Alan Silvestri is a great composer. He's done some of the most, he's not John Williams, because John Williams is like the Michael Jordan of composing. But if you're going to take anybody, Silvestri has done some pretty iconic things. So I'm excited for this.
I'm excited too. And he's, like you said, he's done many, many great things. One of his most noted, of course, is the Forrest Gump soundtrack. Truly awesome. And last but not least, are you ready for the last one? This is good. This is called Breaking Renner. Now, the Hollywood Reporter and Deadline both confirmed that Jeremy Renner, a.k.a. Hawkeye, injured himself on an Atlanta set of the movie Tag. Not Avengers Infinity War. So Avengers fans, hold up. He's okay. But since Tag is an ensemble featuring Ed Helms, Jon Hamm, Hannibal Buress, and more, production on that film is unaffected while Renner heals. He has not begun shooting his part for Infinity War just yet and is scheduled to join his fellow Avengers in Atlanta set at a later date. But he did break both arms. He broke both arms. He broke, one of the radius or the ulna, and then he broke something. I can't remember. But it was an impact. He was doing a stunt, and it went bad, and he broke both arms.
I think this is not incredible in a good way, but because this guy's done so many action films, Tag is actually a comedy. The fact that he breaks both of his arms shooting a comedy when he has been in so many action franchises, it's funny. But Jeremy, I hope you heal, man. I want to see you in Avengers and probably die, because he's going to die in Avengers.
Yeah, he's supposed to die.
But he's dead. I think he's dead.
Well, are you ready to dive into some crazy Spider-Man goodness?
I'm going head first, Joe. I'm so excited.
All right. That's what she said. So we'll be right back. We're going to roll the PopX spoiler alert warning. Now, beyond this point, if you've not seen Spider-Man Homecoming, well, we told you so. We'll be right back.
Danger. You are about to enter a PopX spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, you have been warned. And Austin, I don't want to give you the reins this week, so go for it, my friend. I want to know, go through your list, and then you can just say, okay, Joe, what do you think?
Well, Joe, over the years, we've seen so many different incarnations of Spider-Man, whether it be animation, the Sam Raimi films, the Mark Webb films, and video games. But what people have been clamoring for over the last, we'll say 5 to 10 years, Spider-Man needs to go back to Marvel, right? Well, ladies and gentlemen, Joe and I, and maybe somebody else eventually, we're here to tell you that Spider-Man is back, okay? Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, he is very close to being better than ever. Now, this movie, to me, and I'm going to go ahead and get right into it, it had everything that we've always wanted as a Spider-Man. Those glasses are sexy, Joe. We've had everything we've ever wanted as a Spider-Man fan. And while I have a minor quibble maybe here and there, I can easily say that this is the most fun that I've had in a theater all year, maybe next to Baby Driver. Tom Holland embodies Spider-Man and gives us such a fun incarnation of Peter Parker. But that's the thing. What Tom Holland does with Spider-Man is he plays a kid who doesn't want to be Peter Parker. He does not want to be your average Joe, although he is. He wants to be Spider-Man. And the flow that this movie had is so similar, and everybody's been saying, I'm going to say it again, to a John Hughes movie, right? Your Breakfast Club, your Ferris Bueller, and Ferris Bueller reference in there, but we'll talk about it a little bit later. It has this flavor to it that you don't see in I will say, any of the superhero movies anymore. It's just plain fun. The banter between the kids, the humor in the movie. I mean, this is easily, for me, next to Guardians and maybe Ant-Man, maybe even funnier than Ant-Man, the funniest MCU movie to date. I laughed the entire movie. The movie ends on a hilarious joke, and even the very last after credit scene is maybe the funniest thing I've ever seen in a Marvel movie. It could be the best joke I've ever seen because I was laughing my butt off.
It's definitely the trolling of all trolls.
Marvel literally just said, screw you guys for staying this long. But it was just so incredible, Joe. And I will even – we're going to look at the film making right now. The cinematography was good. The directing was good. The way that he handles his characters, and you see in his prior movie, Cop Car, I don't know if you've seen that. He does a great job with character. And I knew he would bring this movie, but I didn't know he would bring it to a level to where I cared about each individual character, whether it be a major character like a Spider-Man or even a minor character like Happy Hogan. I thought Happy Hogan had a small character arc in this movie. You get to see – well, I'm not going to say it right now. I'm going to say – for a little bit later, but you get to see all these characters that maybe you haven't seen in a long time. You get to see these characters that you thought would be portrayed by one actor, like a Flash Thompson, but they bring in a character from different ethnicity, and I thought it played perfectly. I thought every decision that they made that was different from the comic books worked. Mm-hmm. And I know that's going to make some fans mad, but you're looking at a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes, and you're looking at a very high IMDb score. I don't think it's making fans mad. I think fans are embracing these changes that they made. And I love that. And you know what? It proves to me that you can make these changes to comic book lore. If you do it in the right way, fans are going to be happy regardless. And I think that's what these guys did. I think that's what John Watts did. I think that's what Tom Holland did. And I think these supporting characters, your Neds of the world, or even your Michelles, your Liz's in this movie, they provided this different depth that we've never really seen before in a Spider-Man movie. Tom Holland portrays this high school character. He has high school friends. Now, we had that with Toby and Andrew, but they were, 28 years old in high school. I never really believed that I love their portrayals. I never believed they were in high school, and we never really got to see them in high school. Andrew a little bit more, but never to the level of this movie. And getting into the villain, Michael Keaton, we're talking Loki. We're talking Robert Redford in Winter Soldier. We're talking that level of MCU villain. He had such a great depth. And when we get to the reveal where you find out, and we're talking spoilers, where you find out he is Liz's father, that works so well for me. I did not see that coming. And I know some people may have seen it coming, but I saw that and went, oh my goodness, what are they doing here? Could this work? And then you see the banter between them in the car, and you see him figure out, this is Spider-Man. And I've heard a lot of people complaining about that. Oh, how did he figure that out? He's the smartest man in the world. No, take in the context clues. His voice sounds the exact same. Mm-hmm. Liz was saying, where were you during this, this, and this? These moments where Spider-Man was there. He's a smart guy. He's a blue-collar guy. But he's a smart guy. He's going to figure that out. And then when Liz gets out of the car, and that conversation between Michael Keaton and Peter Parker was fantastic. Mm. I loved that one-on-one.
God, that was so awkward.
Was it not just the writing? Was the writing just not so good? Just like, listen, I know who you are. You do what you're going to do, and I'm going to kill you. And he was just – and that's what makes a good villain, a threatening villain, but you believe where he's coming from. Man. And then at the end when Peter Parker saves his life and you find out that he owes Peter, I think that's going to make for – what the Green Goblin was in the old series, it's going to make for that sort of relationship. And I think they handled it so well. And overall, I'm not going to give my score.
We'll wait till our special guest comes in.
Okay. So, but overall, I'm just going to say before I throw it to you, Joe, I had an absolute blast with this movie, and I could go on for days. And this is in my top five favorite films of the year easily, even though it wasn't, the best made film of the year. All of the great things made up for it, and I loved it. So, Joe, let's go ahead and hear what you have to think, man.
All right, sounds good. Well, I had a chance to write down some keynotes and some kind of speaking points. I didn't enjoy the fact that they didn't relive Uncle Ben's horrible murder scene, which has already been done twice already. But it was alluded to. And after there was a when Ned and Peter were talking in his bedroom, and Ned's like, why don't you just tell her? Why don't you just tell my mate? And he says, Peter looks to Ned and he says, just keep this a secret. I can't tell her now after all that she's been through. Yeah. And, it kind of alluded to Uncle Ben's demise and stuff like that. And, everybody that's coming into Spider-Man already has the established backstory that we've seen. We know, where he's come from, what he had to do. And with great power comes great responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that that was good that they kept that out. Now, I did go back and have a chance to watch Spider-Man number one with Tobey Maguire, and there were probably, I want to say, four, maybe five scenes of high school of, yes, you know, of when Flash comes up and there's a thing when you know, Tobey Maguire gets the Spidey sense and he sees the punch come around in slow motion and he kind of does the dodge. But there's not a lot of it. And then there's one scene in the cafeteria, but pretty much aside from being in his little house and apartment and stuff like that, a lot of the film does take place in a high school setting. And Tom Holland is so believable in being in that role of that teenage, quirky, you know, mindset, and everything's kind of goofy and he's teeny and he's trying to figure, he hasn't figured out who he is. He hasn't figured out his full potential as his powers are. And I think that's awesome. We're in the infancy of the spider. So I don't know where in the MCU, how long he's been bit. I don't know where that timeline is established. If he's maybe 6 months into being bit or if he's 2 months into being bit and that's where the movie picks up. We don't know. But one of the things I did pick up on, this is my inner comic nerd coming out of me because I'm an 80s kid. Adrian Toomes, we all know he is Vulture. And I had a chance to go through my my archive earlier tonight, and Austin Burke has actually had a chance to see some of these. But I picked out some of my covers. It's really interesting. If you go back and look at Vulture in the history of comics, now this one is from 1986. And it says Marvel Tales Spider-Man. Look at what Vulture used to look like back in the day. Isn't that crazy, dude?
That's the change of from then to now is incredible.
It's pretty amazing. And you know, you see Michael Keaton with the Chitauri fueled type thing. I didn't have a chance to pick out two more of my favorite covers, and then I'll get back on the Target. Carnage, first appearance of Carnage, one of my favorite Spider-Man covers of all time. Definitely,
we'll be in the movie very soon.
This is definitely a high-end comic. Of course, this is my top favorite Spider-Man cover of all time. Tom McFarlane, Spider-Man number one. Definitely one of my favorite all-time comics. But one of the things that I picked up on this is Adrian Toomes is part of a company that comes in and cleans up called Damage Control.
Yes.
I heard that word, I'm like, wait, there was a series in the 80s called Damage Control, and it's a reference to the comics. And when Marvel released these in the 80s, superheroes, they left shattered buildings and destruction and dilapidated streets, and the team that come in to clean everything up was called Damage Control. So
fun little fact, Joe, Marvel was actually working on a television series for ABC a couple of years ago called Damage Control. And I guess that got shoved aside. And when that got shoved aside, I feel like they said, hey, why don't we incorporate this into the Spider-Man movies? Yeah. I think that worked to their advantage.
I think it did. And honestly, well, if you think about it, it's kind of like what DC did with the whole powerless thing. Which was horrible. Horrible. I don't know. Moving on past that, we're not even talking DC right now. Another thing I really liked was the Stan Lee cameo, and that was really neat. Yeah. And of course, we the bantering.
The whole scene.
Yeah, the whole thing is just knowing that going into the theater and having just read the headline about his beloved wife just a couple hours before that, I was just like, oh man, you're pulling on my heartstrings here. This is tough. And so I did like when the film opened up. It said a film by Peter Parker.
It's awesome. That was awesome.
I loved that part. I thought it was nice. It was from the perspective of Peter, and he was kind of doing what any teenager would do in a modern era. He'd be going around, you know, filming, and he's like, "Hey, I'm at you." And we got to see the alternate perspective of Civil War.
It was so cool. That's so creative.
It was so creative, and you got to see Ant-Man. You know, like, oh my God, there's a big guy. I gotta go. So funny, man.
And even before that, man, when the movie opens, I'm like, all right, are they going to show the Marvel logo? Is it just going to say Sony? Dude,
I was wondering.
The Spider-Man music. Da-na-na, da-na-na. And you see the Marvel logo. I'm like, we are back, baby. Spider-Man is back.
It felt good. It felt really good. And especially Alex picked up on that. When I took her on Saturday. We went and I saw it for a second time at Disney. Okay. And she saw the Marvel role. And she's like, is that the old Spider-Man song? I'm like, that is the old Spider-Man song. I'm like, oh my God, this is like a proud husband moment. I'm like, oh my God, I've nurtured you from nerd, and now you are a geek. You're no longer a nerd. Now, you're a full-blown geek.
Did you have just as much fun the second time? Because I feel like I would if I watched it a second
time. Well, the second time was actually a lot better for me because there were a lot of things. Okay. There were a lot of things I missed the first round. Because when I go back and see it for the second time, I'm looking for details. I'm listening for dialogue cues. And I got to see this in 3D PRX. So RPX. And oh my God, it was so beautiful in 3D.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, it was so good in 3D. Also, I want to say Pepper Potts is back. Yes. And there is a mysterious ring that's magically been in Happy's pocket since 2008. Now, it raises the question, could Tony and Pepper get married in Infinity War? I don't know. I mean, do you think that Tony and Pepper, or you think Tony's going to propose to Pepper Potts at the press release, or do you think?
Listen, I think that could have even been something that happened and we didn't even see it. Tony Stark proposed to Pepper and they could be engaged right now. Like,
yeah,
we could come into an Infinity War and he could be engaged to Pepper.
That would be kind of cool.
That would be awesome.
That would be kind of cool. So honestly though, I think, the score worked for me perfectly.
Yeah.
I was a little bit bigger fan of the score from, Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. I just kind of liked that heroic sound. I did enjoy the Spider-Man Homecoming soundtrack very much, and I enjoyed definitely some of the key song titles that were used in some of the intro and in credits and stuff like that. For me, Michael Keaton, I'm just going to say it right there, one of the best actors in Hollywood. And not only has he played Batman and Beetlejuice, but now he's Adrian Toomes in the Marvel Cinematic. Michael Keaton. Has not only been in with Warner Brothers in DC, but now he is with the MCU and Kevin Feige and crew. It was truly awesome. Oh my gosh. So
cool to see.
There's so much in my mind, you know, when I'm thinking retrospectively about Spider-Man and I'm thinking about all the amazing things that I saw, just the chemistry between Ned and Parker.
That was so great.
And, you know, I want to be the guy in the chair. I want to be the guy in the chair. And, you know, you think about Felicity Smoke and Arrow, and you think about Oracle in the Batman saga. Ned's kind of like, I want to be that guy in the chair and help you, you know, crack things and stuff. And he does. He unlocks Spider-Man's full suit, which was, what was it, the toddler protocol or something like that?
Yeah, the training wheels.
Training wheels. Yeah.
That's so good, man.
That was so good.
I heard a lot of people complaining about Ned's character. It's like, he was annoying. He's a 15-year-old kid. Who wouldn't? I'm 21, and I would act like that.
You know, I'll be honest with you. If there was a Ned in my life in the 90s when I was in high school, I would probably be his best friend. I'm going to say that right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he was so realistic, man. That is what a 15-year-old kid acts like. And I don't care who you are. He did a great job. And that kid's going to be a pretty good actor.
Well, you know what? We only have just a handful of Easter eggs. Let's try to roll through these. I'm going to get our guest speaker in here.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's just roll through these right quick, and because I definitely do want to hit some of these. Now, the Spider-Man theme song, the film starts right off the bat with a nod to Spider-Man's long history. Rather than include the usual music that plays over the Marvel logo opening included in every film, the music Spider-Man Homecoming is actually the theme song from 1967, Spider-Man.
I didn't know they were going to include it. I saw it on Twitter before the movie, and I'm like, is he going to put it in the movie?
Yeah.
He sure did, and it got everybody motivated. So our next Easter egg is Peter's classmates. Peter's school life is a much bigger part of this film than it was in the previous ones, and as such, he spends more time with his classmates. Among them are a lot of familiar names from Spidey's history. Ned Leeds in the film Ned, played by Jacob Batalon, is Peter's best friend, and the man in the chair in the comics, however, Leeds actually becomes Hobgoblin. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem likely that this film's version of the character will head down that path. Liz Allen, Peter's love interest in the film, actually debuted the same time Spider-Man himself did in Amazing Fantasy number 15. She was a love interest of both Peter and Flash Thompson. Flash Thompson, no matter the universe, Flash is always Peter Parker's high school bully. Betty Brant was in this movie, if you missed her. In the comics, she works for the Daily Bugle, ditto to the Sam Raimi films, where she was played by Elizabeth Banks. That was Elizabeth. Oh, my God. That was Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
wow. I didn't know that. That's cool. I just learned something new. Yeah. But in Homecoming, she's another one of Peter's classmates. She's getting a jump on that journalism career as a reporter for the school news channel. Fun fact, though, in the comics, Betty Brant has a relationship with Ned Leeds before he breaks bad. So these are all different paths that these characters could mm-hmm. could go down, and I think that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Next up on the Easter egg list, we have My Friends Call Me MJ. Now, Michelle, who's wow. played by the film Zendaya, sticks to one background of the most important of Spider-Man Homecoming, more content to be reading her book than caring about what's going on around her. It isn't until one of the last scenes of the film when she is nominated mm-hmm. when she is nominated to be the new captain of the academic decathlon team, she reveals that her friends just call her MJ. In the comics, of course, MJ is the nickname for Mary Jane Watson, the love interest of Mr. Spider-Man Peter Parker himself.
That was definitely interesting and a nice little Easter egg planted by Kevin Feige. I appreciate that.
Yes.
So next up is Vulture's henchman. So Michael Keaton's character, Adrian Toomes, a.k.a. the Vulture, has a pretty decent operation going by the same time Spider-Man starts interfering. But there are two members of Toomes' team that stand out as other villains to the Wallcrawler. Herman Schultz, who is played by Bokeem Woodbine, gets the supervillain name in Spider-Man Homecoming. He is the Shocker. Not exactly the biggest villain in Spider-Man's rogue gallery, but it's fun to see him on the screen after years of Green Goblins. And Phineas Mason, played by Michael Chernus, doesn't actually get his villainous moniker in the film, but in the comics, he's known as, and you can kind of see this in his character, the Tinkerer. So we really had three, counting somebody else,
Scorpion.
Four villains in this movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And, you know, if you notice, one of the henchmen had the scorpion tattoo on his neck. So it was kind of an homage, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so let's see. We got Mark Gargan here is the next up Easter egg. The man who the Vulture meets on the ferry for weapons deal and later runs into prison is Mark Gargan, played by Better Call Saul's Michael Mando. Now, if you couldn't piece it together by the large neck tattoo that he sports in the film, Mac Gargan eventually becomes the Scorpion.
I think they planted those seeds, and I think that could be a very interesting move in the next movie.
Absolutely.
So our next one is, I got a nephew who lives around here. Donald Glover has a small role in Spider-Man Homecoming, which is actually something that kind of freaked me out when I first saw the movie, but then when I realized who he was, that's pretty cool.
Yes.
But an exciting one for Spider-Man fans. Glover plays Aaron Davis, a low-level criminal who eventually becomes a villain called the Prowler. That isn't what makes him special to the film, though. While being interrogated by Spider-Man, Davis mentions that he has a nephew who lives in the area. Aaron Davis is the uncle of Miles Morales, a.k.a. Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, Miles took the place of the Ultimate Universe's Peter Parker after he was killed by the Green Goblin. He now resides in the main 616 universe alongside the Peter Parker we know and love, as it seems is true in the MCU. What makes Glover's casting as Miles' uncle even better is that the Atlanta Star actually campaigned to play the role of Spider-Man in 2010 before Sony went with Andrew Garfield. His campaign eventually led to him to voice Miles in a couple of episodes of the Ultimate Spider-Man animated series. And Joe, Donald Glover is about to be on top of the world because he's about to star in Lion King, Han Solo, and an abundance of films.
I know.
This is cool, man. This is really cool.
I know. I'm right there with you. Next up, we have Karen. Now, Karen is the artificial intelligence AI inside Spider-Man's suit, much like we had Jarvis. And so was the last minute addition is voiced by none other than Jennifer Connelly. Connelly
so cool.
is married to the real life Paul Bettany. Yeah, Vision. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Before becoming so cool. Vision in the Avengers Age of Ultron, voiced Jarvis, the AI in Tony Stark's Iron Man suit.
And she was also Betty in the original Hulk movie, right?
I do believe so, yes.
That's so cool, man. So our next point is Principal Marita in a great and subtle nod, so subtle, nod to the larger MCU. Kenneth Choi plays mm-hmm. the principal of Peter's school. Principal Marita in Captain America the First Avenger, Choi played Jim Marita, a member of the Howling Commandos. He's returned to essentially play his own grandson in Spider-Man Homecoming. In a scene in his office where he is speaking with Peter, there are photos of Jim and the Howling Commandos. Just so minor, but so important.
So subtle. And that's those little subtleties, man. There's even, his name is leaving me, Tucci that played in Captain America. There is a one of the scenes in where Spider-Man goes to an institution, but there's a really quick scene of Tucci as a scientist. You have to split second. Yes, it's in Spider-Man.
That is so cool.
The next one is Amazing Spider-Man number 33. The Spider-Man films have paid homage to famous covers and scenes in the past. Think Peter throwing away his Spider-Man costume in the garbage in Spider-Man number 2, and Homecoming is pretty much no different. Near the end of this film, after the Vulture drops a roof on Spidey, Peter struggles to push up the rebel off himself as water rains down on him. Now, this is a direct tribute to a famous Steve Ditko sequence in The Amazing Spider-Man number 33. And this actual scene is drawn almost exactly as it was portrayed in the film.
Yes. I thought that was so cool. And I believe in that comic, it's Doc Ock who does that to him. And Michael Keaton's Vulture kind of reminded me of Spider-Man 2's Doc Ock, played by Alfred Molina. I thought that was just such a cool, the way it circled back around. So the final point is the Iron Spider. After the final battle and the dust settles, Peter is driven to the new Avengers complex in upstate New York, where Iron Man offers him an Avengers membership as well as a shiny new suit. While not exactly the same, it does bear resemblance to the Iron Spider suit Stark builds for Peter during the Civil War comic book storyline. And that, Joe, seeing that, just like the icing on the cake.
So beautiful, dude.
Delicious.
That was a delicious costume to look at. Now, that does end up our Easter eggs. Now, before we invite our guest on board, which he's going to be here in just a couple of minutes, I do want to throw one thing, spider, in your dumplings.
Okay.
There's one grievance I had with the film.
Okay.
All right. So 2012 is technically when the Avengers took place. You see where I'm going with this? Continuity.
8 years. Yep.
So if they say this film took 8 years after, that means this film would take place in 2020, which would mean it would be 2 years before Civil War, but Civil War has already taken place. There is some continuity issues here, and I really wish they wouldn't have said 8 years. I really wish they would have just said like 4.5 or 5 years, which would have made more sense.
Now people are online saying the Avengers took place in 2010, and to me that's just trying – I don't know if it's pushing forward or if it's moving backwards, but Kevin Feige needs to come out and make a statement about this, because this is something that is making people look down on the film, and I don't want that.
Doctor Strange partially broke the timeline.
It did.
It partially broke. I mean, not devastatingly.
No.
But Spider-Man Homecoming, the continuity timeline of the MCU.
It's off.
It's pretty much severed.
And I don't want it to end up like Fox.
No, I don't either. Fox is all over the place. Fox don't even know what year it is. But anyway, you know who you are. Go ahead and feel free to chime on in and join us in the conversation. We want to hear what our special guest has to think. So come on in, call on in, hang out with us. Let's see what's going on. And
let's talk Spider-Man.
Let's talk some Spider-Man. So he'll be calling here in just a second.
Joe, I had a few quibbles with the film. There were some moments at the end where, you know, the Tony Stark voiceover at the end I thought was a little eh. And there was some dialogue where I was like, okay, but I can't let those things impede on my view of the film. And I think you guys are the same way. And speaking of you guys, here he is.
Hello, Mr. Wagner de Santos. How are you doing, my friend?
What's going on?
Man, what's going on? So I heard through the grapevine or the spider web that you went and saw the film just yesterday. Oh,
man, I sure did. Well, first of all, let me say that I always learn so much from listening to you guys. You are just such a wealth of information, not even just a wealth of information, but the way that you explain it. I hope everybody knows that you can be an ultra nerd geek, or you could be entry level and you'll still appreciate the content the same way.
I consider myself God mode. I've enabled God mode on Doom, so I'm just kind of running around doing. No, I'm joking. I'm checking my pride at the door. But let me just to answer you, Wagner. I'm very blessed, and I've had a very blessed life in terms of comic book history, and not only following the storylines, but following the individuals who created the storylines. And so that there is where my passion is driven. So,
and I'm very blessed to have Joe as a cousin. And when I was younger, I looked up to him and I knew he was a comic book fan. And Joe, you're actually the reason that I got into comic books like I did. So for that, I'm appreciative.
Well, Well, seriously, Doug, son, you're about ready to make a little tear coming down.
Just saying.
Wagner, you go ahead and talk. I'm going to have a moment here. Talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. Spider-Man Homecoming, go for it.
The clump.
I'm getting the clump.
All right. So first of all, I have to tell the story by this interesting episode. So I decided, all right, let me rewind. Joe was very instrumental in helping me make my decision. I knew I was going to check out Spider-Man mm-hmm. on Sunday, but I wasn't 100% sure if I wanted to go for the 3D experience, the 3D RPX experience, or the standard experience, because, you know, sometimes some of these movies, they kind of force the 3D aspect, mm-hmm. but they didn't really plan strategically for 3D. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So I thought, okay, if it's one of those, then I'll just see the standard version. We'll be fine. But Joe said, oh, treat yourself. Go full gusto. Go 3D RPX. So I did. And I ended up going to a later show so that I could see it. Well, so if any of you guys have ever done the RPX experience, the simple way to explain it is that it's an immersive experience to where you feel every thud, every gunfire, every, you know, the subwoofer is in you, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
So you feel it all. And at the theater that I went to, they have recliner seats, right? A lot of the theaters are doing that, and they call them butt kicker recliner seats. I don't know if they all call them that, but they do at the theater that I go to. So I was in my butt kicker recliner seat and getting ready. I'm very religious when I go to the theater. It's a very important experience. I have to catch all the trailers,
yes.
all the trailers. I don't miss the trailers. Suck it all up. And then I'm ready. Nobody, if I'm with a date or friends, don't talk to me during the movie. Nothing. Focused. So yes, they don't even have to tell me to turn off my phone. I'm already there. So I turn off my phone. I put it on the counter and I have my drink and I'm ready. Well, midway through the movie, I don't know. I don't know why I was thinking about this, but I was, I guess because there was a lot of shaking going on and I was like, where's my phone? The phone's no longer there.
No. It vibrated into the floor, huh?
It vibrated in the floor or it joined the movie. The phone was not in my and you know, I was so sucked into the movie that I was like, you know, who cares? I'll deal with it later.
I hate to tell you, Wagner, that Stark Tech is not permitted in the cinematic experience. So,
that's what it means.
That's what it is.
I'm just letting you know. Yeah, I'm just letting you know that right off the bat. So
that's what it is. Well,
the movie though,
I wasn't worried about it, and I brought my father. You know, usually I spend Sundays with my dad. My dad is 81; will be 82 in October. So he's
awesome.
He's not your typical. You know, Marvel comics kind of movie. You know, he likes action movies, but he likes realistic ones.
Right.
Put it that way.
Right.
You know? So he's not into the fantasy. So, you know, at the end, you know, he was a good sport. He was like, okay, let's go. I said, we should wait. And he said, oh, there's nothing that's going to happen. I said, there's always something that's going to happen. Let's wait for the credits. And unfortunately, because there were a lot of people that left, some people that left during the credits, and I was like, you guys are just dumb.
Yeah.
And then after the credits, right, I probably would have left had it not been for, well, I'm going to wait for everybody to leave so I can check on where my phone is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully I did because, you know, you had one more surprise.
The best.
With, right?
Which is awesome. America, yeah.
It was so hilarious. So that's my initial story. Now, you guys pretty much said everything that I would have said about the movie. It was amazing. It was mind-blowing. It was the first thought that I had was that, man, they got it right finally. This mm-hmm. is true to the Spider-Man story. They cast the right kid. They put the right story around it. I have goosebumps talking about it. It was right. It was done right this time. You know, and everything you said, the surprises, I also didn't see the Michael Keaton, you know, a surprise that, you know, when he went into his house and, you know, I was like, whoa, didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I just saw him as a, you know, as the villain that he was always going to be.
But now, you know, it was a father of Liz. So that was kind of a big moment. Yeah.
That was a big moment. What I think is really interesting, and you guys will probably agree, is that probably somewhere around maybe the 80s, we saw with Batman and we saw with Superman, where the stories started to accept the revealing of the person beyond behind the capes, right? Mm-hmm. Where for a long time, you know, you could never know who Batman's real identity was. You couldn't know who Superman's real identity was. I mean, there was all this secrecy, and I think it got to a point where people were feeling like, no, at some point, people are going to start to figure stuff out. I mean, yes. How can he keep seeing the same girl and she doesn't know? I mean, so yeah. I love the fact that we're seeing with, and we saw it with Spider-Man, and we've seen it with others, where there's a comfort in allowing people to know your true identity, but it doesn't mm-hmm. spoil the storyline.
Yes.
Right?
I get what you're saying. And, you know, it wasn't even when Batman came out on Detective Comics number 27, 1939, his backstory, we saw there's a couple of frames in that comic book where you see the death of his father, Thomas and Martha Wayne. But his backstory wasn't written until several years later. So you have a period of comics where it's just a guy in a cape and this really crazy look, 40s looking Batmobile, if you will, that was just kind of decked out and running around fighting crime, but we didn't know who he was beyond the cape. Mm-hmm. And so what right. happened was they had to come in, Bob Kane and Joe Finger actually came in and wrote Bob Kane wrote the backstory later on. And it was really interesting. And of course, when Stan Lee comes up, you have Amazing Fantasy, number one,
yeah.
Spider-Man, right out of the gate. Peter Parker's a nerd, and he's trying to figure everything out. He works at the Daily Bugle, blah, 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 yada, yada. So definitely you can see the true dynamic between how DC revealed their characters and how Marvel revealed theirs, because usually in the first issue, we know their name, their backstory, and their entire legacy within the first issue.
Yes, yes, yes. Seeing Stan there was awesome, of course. Oh, yeah. You know, it's always a great moment when he pops in with a little cameo. And that was hilarious. Was that popping out the window?
His cameos are just, they're always funny and amazing and fun to watch. So
it's awesome. And, you know, I'll tell you, going back to my dad, it's interesting bringing someone who isn't into those kind of movies and didn't grow up with comic books or any of that stuff, and to explain mm-hmm. to them, and to explain why these movies are still relevant to adults and why they're great in general. And my dad was like, oh, this is just silly. And I explained to him, I said, you know, there's a great message that comes with all these movies.
Oh yeah.
And that's, you know, that I think is one of the real charms. I mean, for example, with Spider-Man, you know, there are messages of stay in school and, you know, that, you know, don't just be Spider-Man when you put on the costume, but you know, you should be something even without the costume. You know, you need to be.
It's a great message.
Great message.
I love what Tony Stark said, that you've got to be able to be yourself without the costume.
Yes,
you've got to be exactly. And so, you know, Peter had to put on his old sweatpants and go back out and actually be that. And you hit
humbled him.
And even too, something you didn't mention was actually Peter Parker was bullied in high school. So there's stories and stuff like that of being bullied and overcoming that. And Spider-Man and his quirkiness handles it with grace and elegance without being a bully himself. Do you see what I'm saying? Yep. And I think that it's really awesome. That's one of the things that resonated with me in comic books, is that it doesn't matter what story you're into, whether it's Spider-Man, Hulk, Captain Avengers, Superman, Flash, Arrow, whatever. But there's always this message that resounds. Each hero has their own little pinpoint on the radar of the human experience. And of course, I resonate usually with the Incredible Hulk, because that's something that just really appeals to me. But it's amazing that there's something out there for everyone if you just dive in and take a moment and read the books. And, you know, at an early age, that's one of the things that started helping me, and especially with Spider-Man. Spider-Man is easily my number two superhero of all time. And so Spider-Man, I was a quirky teenager. I was bullied in high school, and I was pretty much going through everything Peter was. Only thing is, I couldn't crawl up walls. But trust me, I tried to. I fell down a few times. But so it's interesting, though, as a good point. And so as we're starting to wrap up here, Wagner and Austin, I want to give our numerical review.
This is fun.
All right. So now what we're going to do, Wagner, this is what we do. We're going to do it a little bit different right now. Instead of 1 out of 5, we're going to go on a percentile of 1 to 100%. Like if you were grading grading a school score paper, I'm going to break out the Austin Burke Burkometer here.
That's what I Rotten Apples does that, right?
Yes.
So our guest of the night, Wagner, I want to hear if you were going to rate this film on 1 to 100%, you know, exclude Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb and all of that. This is your personal account of what this film is. What would be your percentile?
I would, I think I would give it 100%.
Wow.
I really would.
That's freaking huge, man.
It's awesome, man.
It hits so many great points throughout. I think they knocked it out of the park.
Dang, that's so awesome. That's legit.
That's awesome. That's so awesome.
All right, Austin, where you at?
You broke out my scoring system. I love that, Joe. Yeah. I love giving things a percentage because I feel like, okay, it's kind of like we're going to grade this like I was graded in high school, except this is going to get a higher score than I ever got. okay, so the thing that I love about this movie, and this is my last point, I'll shut up after this, is every Spider-Man movie up to this point has revolved around the relationship with Peter Parker and the girl. Right? It's Peter Parker and Mary Jane, Spider-Man 1 through 3, Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. This movie was all about Peter wanting to be Spider-Man. It was about Peter and Tony's relationship. This explored so many things that a Spider-Man movie has never explored. And while I do hold Spider-Man 2, the original Tobey Maguire one, very close to my heart, and it's neck and neck for me, I'm going to give Spider-Man Homecoming a 90%.
Wow.
And that may sound, you know how tough I am, Joe. Yeah. This is the third highest score I've given all year. I only gave 3 or 4 9s last year, right?
Yeah.
So this movie will easily remain in my top 10 unless this is the greatest year in film history. In that case, it'll get knocked out. But I love this movie so much, and I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. No. It's going to remain relevant in pop culture. It's going to remain relevant in the MCU. And I think they did a fantastic job with this film. So I'm going to give it a 90%.
Wow. Okay. So I guess it's between Wagner's 100, Austin is 90. I am going to give this a 94 percentile.
I think that
was the number that kept coming to my mind walking out of the theater. I was like, man, this is 94. I just kept hearing that number over and over. I would have rated this much higher had not they done the MCU timeline break and the continuity of the actual, because, when they said fast forward 8 years, I'm like, oh, wait, that's 2020. How can that be? There's some stuff that needs to be either explained or figured out on their end, but that is very minor stuff. So I'm not going to even use any of that. But definitely 94%. So we have 100% from Wagner. We have 90% from Austin. We have 94% from myself. And we want to hear what you rated this. So if you want to comment below, send us an email, popxcast@gmail.com, or just tweet us at popxcast and let us know what you rated a Spider-Man Homecoming. And we'll definitely we'll use it and we'll retweet it for sure. But Wagner, thanks for hanging out with us. Stay right there. Stay right there as we want to wrap up the show here. As always, if you see something exciting on the shelves at your local comic book shop or in theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media using our hashtag YoPopX. If you use the hashtag, we could use your post or image on a future episode of PopXcast. So, #YoPopX.
And we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts from our home network. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXcast. We would love to hear from our listeners. Send comments and suggestions to popx@gmail.com. Also, for future and past shows, make sure to check out our official website at www.popxcast.com. I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator on the Twits and the Instagrams, and go watch my video I posted today. It is the top 5 moments of Spider-Man Homecoming, and I go into grave detail, and it's at Austin Burke on YouTube. Leave nice comments, not me ones.
All right, Wagner, how can people find you on the internet, my friend?
You can find me on the interwebs at Wagner.live, and Wagner is spelled WAGNER. And that is your hub for all things Wagner Live and the show that happens typically three times a week. We were on break for a while, but three times a week, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
Awesome, Mr. Wagner. Thanks so much, by the way, for hanging out with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. And I am Joseph Burke, a.k.a. at Joseph Burke Arts, J-O-S-E-P-H-B-U-R-K-A-R-T-S. Say that 10 times fast on the internet. And of course, hats off to my amazing team, PopX, Austin Burke for his amazing nerdy Appalachian geekiness, Lindsay Badger Absolutely. For her uncanny marketing skills, and mm-hmm. just everybody that comes and listens and watches and interacts with us on a weekly basis. We are truly humbled and in your debt. So PopX mm-hmm. is going to a summer break after this episode here, episode 60. And we will return in the fall for Thor Ragnarok review coming up in November. But that doesn't mean that PopX is leaving. We're going to be bringing you some ongoing content. We're looking for a brand new segment that will be bringing you pop news. It will be a Ooh. Weekly segment that will be streamable on multiple platforms, multiple social media outlets, and something that is quick, 10 to 15 minutes, news segments in your face, mm-hmm. done by the yes. team of PopX. Until we return in November. So sit tight. Great things are coming. And you know what? From all of us here at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. See you next time on episode number 61. Wagner, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Adios, muchachos.
From everyone at PopXCast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on.